I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere. Welcome to The Bridge to Everywhere. Join us as we explore health, community, and culture from a holistic perspective. Health topics addressed on our show are for information and entertainment and should not be taken as medical advice. If you have a medical condition, please consult an appropriate care provider.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Bridge Everywhere. This is Kevin Middleton. I'm here with Samantha Berg, and today we are interviewing Andrew Kirka, local Paralympic athlete. He's 20 years old. He's lived quite an extraordinary life, and we're really, really excited to have him here in the studio today to share his story and all of the amazing things that he's been up to in the last few years.
And I'm just posting a picture on our Facebook of Kevin and I with Andrew. And I want to give you guys a little bit of an introduction to Andrew. So Andrew's a Paralympic monoskier, X Games competitor, bodybuilder, coach, entrepreneur, and radio station DJ. As a young teenager, he was severely injured in a four-wheeler accident, resulting in partial paralysis in his lower legs. Now he dedicates his life to inspiring others to discover the power of motivation, positive attitude, and perseverance. Andrew has found that there are a lot of people with disabilities that don't realize the opportunities and options that they have to engage in life in exciting, challenging, and very rewarding ways. Whether recently injured or born with a disability, and even for those of us who have no disability but are facing difficult times, Andrew shows us all that it's possible to reach higher, stay the course, and connect with a world full of possibilities. Andrew was the miracle child for the Children's Miracle Network in 2005 at age 15. He flew with Blue Angels pilot for a day, was a representative of Alaska, wished upon a North Star, and he met with President George W. Bush representing Alaska at the Miracle Network Convention. Welcome, Andrew Kirka.
Welcome.
Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Wow, you talked me up a little bit. Jeez, not like I have much to live up to right now.
All right, stakes are high.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I think what we'd like to do is just talk a little bit about your background growing up in Alaska. What was that like for you? And then talk about the accident that happened.
All right. Well, originally I was born and lived the first 8 years of my life in Homer. And I love Homer. I love fishing. I grew up on a farm, 640 acres. And, you know, that's a piece of my life helped me to realize the peace that's out there, you know, because I grew up, it was really quiet, helped me to really appreciate the little things. And then, you know, my parents split up, you know, first part of my life, I was probably about 8 years old, I moved up here to the valley. And around 13, I got in my four-wheeler accident. Before I got my four-wheeler accident, I was an avid wrestler, four-time state champion, you know. I've always had kind of a philosophy that, you know, you live life to the fullest. You have to try your hardest at every little thing you do. Because I like to say, life's short, live it fast. I've started that ever since I've started skiing, because, you know, I race. But, you know, every little piece of life, if you don't live it to the fullest, it makes me feel like I'm wasting it. And I don't like to go to bed at night knowing that I could have tried a lot harder or done a lot better with something in that day. You know, I guess you could call it a perfectionist. I'm not sure what it is, but it's that little voice in my head that always tells me that I could do better.
I like that's a perfectionist at living life to the fullest, right? And so you know at the end of the day whether you've given it your all or not, right? Nobody else is looking over your shoulder and saying, you didn't quite make it today, Andrew. So you're going to be your biggest critic on this one.
Exactly.
Yeah, but
exactly.
I hear you actually framing it in a positive way. So it's not like it's some negative thing, but it's really something you use to actually power you forward. Is that right?
That's exactly it. I don't let it get me down. I'm just like, you know what? Next time I'm going to do better at that because I know that I can, and I know that every little thing that I do, you can try a lot better. I think, you know, that's what makes me such a good skier in a way, is because when I first started, you know, I looked at those little things. Like when I grew up, I had that time outside, I had that peace where I could look at my life and I could see the little things in it. And, you know, I think my childhood really helped to make a big difference with that. And now that I'm up here, now that I'm skiing, I look at it, and when it comes down to that hundredth of a second in everything you do, and that little piece of perfection, you know, you can apply that to every bit of your life. And I really plan on living my whole life like that. And, you know, hopefully others will as well, because for me, it really has paid off. And it's really done a lot for my life, not only financially, you know, not only in a way that sets up the rest of my future for my family or all of that, but also for others. And I hope that they can really see that. And that's the way I feel that I need to live my life, because if I just live it for myself, that's selfish, and that's yeah, not a good way to live. In my opinion, the way you look at it, you know, it's pretty simple.
I like that. You know, when you're a high speed racer, that you know you're really measuring life down to the 100th of a second increments, and really that attuned to the moment. I mean, really,
that really brings you into the present in a different way when you think about life in terms of 100th of a second increments.
It really does. It really does. Every single little thing that you could do to, like, on the hill get that much faster, or every little thing that you could do, like, in life to make it that much better, or to, you know, help others in that little bit of a way.
So I do want to get to talking about the accident, but before I do, since we're talking about your attitude towards life, I meet a lot of people, you know, over the course of a week, over the course of a month, over the course of a year, and not a lot of people have this attitude that you have. So obviously this isn't something that you developed necessarily just after the accident. It sounds like it's been part of your life for a long time. Is there anybody in particular who you would say was an inspiration to you to live your life this way? Or is this just something, this is just the way that you've always been?
You know what? I've always been a little bit positive. Like, kind of ever
a
since.
A little bit positive.
A little bit positive. Ever since.
Gosh darn it! There's that Andrew. He's just a little bit positive.
Exactly. Well, you know, there's a lot of people along the way that have really helped me to see the good in what I do. Like, a lot of it has been my family. You know, the outlook on life. You guys do acupuncture on my mother and my grandma. You know, every time I got that little bit of a down, because when you're looking at everything and you're perfecting it, a lot of times you fail to see the positive in what's gone. Like, you start at, you know, say zero, and you move to number 10, you know, and you're at number 8 right now, but you didn't get to number 10 as fast as you can. They're like, hey, you still went from 0 to 8. And that's where those others in life really helped move me along. You know, my mother, my grandma, they've really helped me along. But it's kind of been my pressure to move forward that has really made that big difference, I'm willing to say. And you know what? That's where the helping others comes in, because without them being there, who knows where I'd be. Now, I've had a lot of difficulties, you know, with my family, you know, the usual family stuff. A lot of them have gone through, but a lot of people have gone through. But, you know, I think the big difference is really the selflessness that I'm able to live through my life and how they helped me to get there.
Yeah, and I think that most of us, most of us are really standing on the shoulders of so many people, you know, that have, you know, maybe even people we don't even know or have never met, really. You can think about the ideas, the people, the inspirations that have maybe carried us, maybe stories that we've heard, maybe people are just nice to us in the right moment. And I think that just to be awake to really the good fortune that most of us, certainly in the modern West, have had, and then the question is, what do we do with it, and can we actually be a role model for others?
You know, I think that's a very good point. You know, sometimes we all get a little bit down, and there's always that little thing that picks us up or reminds us the little bit of better we can do, whether it's like a piece of a movie, a piece of a clip, somebody who's there for you, or the Olympics. When I was younger, what inspired me to want to be an Olympian was watching the Olympics and seeing how amazing those people could be. You know, the heart and the soul they put behind the perfection of each of their sports, they have to, you know, look into that 100th of a second. They have to eyeball it, and they have to do it to complete perfection, or you know, they're gonna lose.
Yeah, no limits. it's no limits.
Exactly.
It's no limits, but also what he's saying, I mean, you don't get there without all those people behind you. So, you know, I think sometimes in our culture, we think that we're supposed to do it all ourselves. We're supposed to do it on our own. And every Olympic athlete, you know, standing on the podium or not on the podium, has all these people behind them. You know, they have coaches, they have friends, they have family, they have supporters, they have, you know, people who are helping them through every step of the way so they can be their best.
That's true.
Yeah.
And so let's get back to, because we're going to go into high-speed racing here. I really want to go into depth into what you're doing.
Let's talk about the accident first. I'd love it if you would just take us through that day, you know, what that was like, because that was a pretty life-changing moment for you. So just how that day started and how that day ended up for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to start actually with telling you, you know, I was an avid wrestler, you know, 4-time state champion, 1-time Olympic champion. And, you know, watching the Olympics is really what inspired me, because my coach, when I was younger, you know, how they always kind of, they give you kind of like that punch on the shoulder, like, you know, that, what is it, like negative, positive influence, you know, that one snidey comment that makes you want to try harder. He was always doing that. And one day he told me, he said, you know, there's always somebody better. And I went home that day and the Olympics just happened to be on. And wrestling just happened to be on, and I was like, you know what? That's how you become the best. And ever since then, it's evolved into what I have now. But that's what got it started. That's what got my dream started. So I was a very avid wrestler, and I've actually wrestled since I broke my back. Yeah, I believe you guys know that. Well, it's a new thing for everybody that's out there listening. They now know that I wrestled, and I've actually recently stopped because I didn't want it to conflict with my skiing career. But what happened was, you know, I broke my back in the four-wheeler accident. I was an avid wrestler. That day started, I was just going to Jim Creek, heading out on a normal fishing trip, and heading out to go get some salmon, and went up a hill, just a little bit too steep. And I bailed, but the four-wheeler fell down on top of me, fell on my head. It crushed a piece of my skull, and it severed a piece of my spinal cord. And
so you were going up the hill and you fell off the four-wheeler and it kind of went back and over on top of you, or it kind of rolled off over to the side?
I jumped off.
You jumped off. Okay. And then the four-wheeler rolled on top of
you. It toppled down the hill.
Uh-huh. And landed on you after toppling down the hill.
This is true. Okay. That's exactly how it happened.
Wow.
Yeah. No, it hit. What happened was I was down in kind of like a crouching position. I was on one knee, like in football, where they say take a knee. I was down in that position, and it landed on my head, and it compressed everything. And between my thoracic level T10 and T12, I shattered T11 and fractured everything else. So
you're out there by yourself, right? Nobody else is there.
I had one friend with me.
Okay. And he saw this.
Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah, he was there.
And then what happened?
I was only 13, so I laid there. I stood up, and I started walking a little bit, and my legs were really numb, and then I just collapsed. And my friend ran to get help, and it was ironically funny the way it happened, because he ran to the left, and then he was gone like 5-6 minutes, and then somebody came running up from the right. So they were off. They saw it from like miles away, and he ran off to get help in the opposite direction.
Wow.
It was pretty funny the way it happened. But you know what? I actually contribute that. I actually am glad I got those few minutes to be kind of frightened for myself, because it kind of, I'd like to say, I guess it put the fear of the Lord in me, gave me a chance to sit there and pray and to kind of contemplate on where I was, and gave me a chance to look back at my life, because, you know, it could end in just a split second.
Did you think you were going to die?
Yeah.
You thought it was that
severe?
Oh,
yeah.
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 Uh-huh.
Yeah. I thought I was dead.
Was that from the pain, or were you so disoriented? Like, what had you actually think that you were going to die?
I wasn't disoriented at all, actually, but I was bleeding profusely from multiple places.
Okay, so you're losing a lot of blood.
Yeah, the four-wheeler landed on top of my head, and the inside of my ear was bleeding.
Wow.
Perforated my eardrum, and the top of my skull was ripped open, so it was like pouring all over the place.
Wow.
And I couldn't feel my legs.
Uh-huh.
Laying there, and I was you know, I was scared. I was 13 years old.
Yeah,
like, what are you going to do?
But you also just said that you had gotten up and walked for a second.
I did.
Yeah, so yeah. Right after the accident, you actually were able to walk.
Yeah, what happened, the way the doctors explained it, was I completely shattered T11, my vertebrae at T11.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened was I didn't have a chance to pinch my spinal cord yet. So when I stood up, I put the weight through my spinal cord, and it moved my spine, the bottom part of my spine in one direction, and the top part of my spine in the other. And that's where shards of my bone were able to cut my spinal cord.
Oh.
And
wow.
Yeah, that's what happened. So I was a wrestler, got in the four-wheeler accident, and I was very frightened. Luckily, there were lots of people there that were willing to help, because it was salmon season. You know, there was one guy in particular, Ryan, who came up and he helped me out. He was really nice. He took his shirt off. I still remember it to this day because it smelled like BO. But he was a very
Ryan, if you're out there, We like the smell of your shirt.
he was a very, very nice guy, though, so it didn't really bug me. He comforted me, and he went and got some water, you know, put it on my face, helped me wash the blood out of my eyes and everything. And
did the bleeding naturally stop, or did you have a compression? Somebody kind of compressed the...
It stopped once the helicopter got there.
Okay.
Once the helicopter showed up. Now, where I just happened to be, there wasn't service. So it took about 2 hours before they finally showed up. So
you were laying basically in the dirt.
Yeah, I was laying in the sand for 2 hours, and I was laying there. It was quite unfortunate, but you know, I was also fortunate of the people that just happened to be around at that time, because, you know, they put jackets on top of me, they put a pillow under my head, they washed the blood out of my eyes. You know, they were very kind. It was a pretty serious accident. Mm-hmm. But like I said, you know, the helicopter got there. They got me all taken care of, sent me straight to the Providence Medical Center, where I proceeded to get an infection, which was nearly killed me.
Where was that?
That was in my kidneys. It originated in my kidneys, and it was traveling to my lungs.
Wow.
Yeah, I got very fortunate that it disappeared, because they gave me antibiotics, and there really wasn't too much that they could do. And, you know, I got lucky because my mom's friend just happened to come in and was like, you know, cranberry juice helps with that a lot. And I was like, oh, that's really natural, and drank a lot of cranberry juice.
Wow.
I've never drank so much cranberry juice. I was afraid for my life, you know, for a 13-year-old to go through all of that. You know, now I look at 13-year-olds. I thought I was so big back then. I look back, I'm like, wow.
Right.
They're so small.
So did you have surgery at that point, too, or were they waiting for the infection to go away?
They waited. Well, actually, the infection happened after the surgery.
Oh, okay.
They waited.
Okay.
They waited a week, I believe, 5 to 7 days before I had my surgery. Mm-hmm. And the surgery, they cut down my spine and infused two of my my invertebrae, and then I put a few titanium plates in surrounding it with some mesh netting, which helps to hold everything in place.
So there's a lot of hardware in there.
There's a lot of hardware in there, yeah. I have one scar that runs straight down my spine, and then one that's opened up across the left side of my abdominals, where they could get to the both sides of my spinal cord.
Were these surgeons in Providence or at Massey Regional?
Providence. Dr. Kralik did a great job, actually. Really like the guy. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's pretty much the way it happened. I got really fortunate because not only my doctors, but the nurses there were really great. They were willing to help out in every way possible. They were really, really nice. And, you know, there's not too much else I can say. I was fortunate along the way of everybody that was there for me, I guess. I hear a lot of people that have negatives, you know, from going to the hospital, but you know what? It did nothing but good for me at that time.
Sounds like you had a good team.
Yeah.
So what was the point where you realized I'm paralyzed?
Was that actually known? I mean, was it okay, we're going to have to wait and see? Or did they say, hey, look, you know, you're probably not going to get full function from your legs? How did it go?
Well, my mom still thinks that I'm completely fine and that nothing ever happened. So there's always that piece of perspective. But the doctor said that I severed both sides of my spinal cord. And when I first broke my back, I had no function anywhere below my abdominals, around T10. So I had no function below like my second ab in my belly.
Wow.
And I slowly was able to work it back. The doctor said that the chances of me being able to walk were improbable, but not impossible. So he left both options open. They said the chances of me walking again were less than like 1%. So, you know, like he said it in a very nice way, which was good. I appreciated him for that.
So at 13, what are you thinking when somebody says that to you? Are you thinking, no way, I'll be the 1%, or are you just trying to take it in? Do you remember how you dealt with that?
Originally, Ian, I got very upset. I told him, get out.
Right.
Screw off.
Uh-huh.
That's what I said.
Shoot the messenger.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I had him get out. And, you know, I sat there. I had my few moments with lots of tears because, you know, how am I going to keep wrestling? At that time, that was everything that I was doing. I planned on going to the Olympics. that was going to be me, you know? And at that time, it wasn't. And, you know, it really, that's where the family helped to pick me up when I fell for those few moments. And, you know, they were there to help when I had any issues. My mom said, you know what, the first step, if you were going to try that hard to wrestle, why don't you try that hard to walk again? Wow. And I said,
wow.
All right.
Go mom.
Yeah, exactly. Go mom.
For strong mothers.
Yeah. And the other thing she said that, you know, I'll never forget, and the one thing that I tell a lot of the other people that I talk to that have recently been in an accident is, you know, it happened to you for a reason because you were strong enough to take it. Now help others with what you can do. And, you know, she said that. I added on the help others with what you can do. But she said the first part, you know, which really made a big difference. The reason it happened to you is because you can handle it. And that's what made the big difference. So, Happy, are we going to take a break?
No, we get 10 more minutes, I think, before
10 minutes?
We take a break. Yeah,
oh, and then I thought that was 10 seconds.
Oh, no, that, oh, that was 10 going. Minutes. you're doing good. So, you've had the moment where you've been, you know, in tears, and you're dealing with it, and you've told the surgeon to get out, basically,
yeah.
You know, and then you come to terms with it. So what's the next step? What's the first thing that you did to start the process of getting better?
Well, you know, the hospital put me in the recovery room upstairs for the physical therapy. I started my occupational therapy. They started me learning how to live in a wheelchair, which I did not want to learn how to do. Yeah. It wasn't working out well. I feel sorry for every one of those ladies that tried helping me, because I was being stubborn. I was like, stop teaching me how to be in a wheelchair, teach me how to walk.
Uh-huh.
You know? I was yeah, the poor ladies. I wasn't being very nice. But you know what? They were patient and they helped me get through it. That's where Providence and the medical systems really helped.
So you did start out in a wheelchair, though. So you left the hospital in a wheelchair?
I was in a wheelchair for 2 years.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. I was in a wheelchair for 2 years. And I recently got some new leg movement back. Actually, it's still coming back.
Wow.
I contribute that to still keeping an active lifestyle. I'm working a lot, but I'm still trying to find time to go to the gym and to go swimming, jump in a lake on an occasion, you know, have fun.
So how do you go from the 2 years in the wheelchair to actually not needing the wheelchair? How does that process happen?
Oh, my mom threw my wheelchair outside once I got my leg braces. Uh-huh. I'm really thankful that she did
that.
Had you gotten comfortable in the chair at that point? Was it something that was starting to become an obstacle?
Well, it was, actually. You know, I had it in me to be able to walk because, you know, I was working very hard. I was swimming every day, and I was working out like 4 hours a day. Every day from the moment, like 6 months after my accident, I started getting a little bit of sensation back in my lower abdominals. Every night I did a little bit of sit-ups, I did a little more sit-ups, and you know, I held onto the bed because I wasn't able to do a full sit-up. I held onto the bed and I pulled myself up just to get up a little bit further. And you know, I started getting stuff back, I started getting sensation back, and I was like, you know, I'm starting to get better in the wheelchair, you know, why not just stay in the wheelchair? And I got these leg braces, and my mom threw my wheelchair out the door and said, you're going to use those. And I said, okay. If you want your wheelchair back, go get it. So I did that.
I mean, it's sounding a little bit like the kind of Christopher Reeve in some ways. I mean, obviously he was paralyzed from the neck down, but he was told he would never get any sensation back. You know, whatever he got, I think 6 weeks out from the accident was as far as he would get. And, you know, 7 years out, he was still getting some change because of how hard he was working.
Exactly.
So just to make the point of like how, I mean, another person would have said, okay, you know, come to terms with being in the wheelchair and then just gone, okay, this is how far I'm going to get and I'm going to stay in a wheelchair and I'm going to be really strong. But you were getting little incremental changes and that was inspiring you to keep pushing forward and pushing forward. And then, you know, the little push from your mom, of course,
yeah.
to go the extra step. But I mean, you could have ended up in a wheelchair. You could be in one now if you hadn't had that little push.
You know, it saddens me, especially with how many people that I see in a wheelchair who don't put the effort to ever walk again. Because with my level of injury and the seriousness that I had, I shouldn't have ever walked again. And I worked hard, you know. And I see a lot of these people 2 months, 3 months out of their accident, you know, they're not working at all. I see they're not going to physical therapy. They're just learning how to be in the wheelchair.
Wait, what's interesting to me is your attitude when you first got in the wheelchair was, no way, I don't want to learn this, I'm not doing this, but how quickly, you know, like it's that you came to terms with the fact, well, I guess I'm going to be in a wheelchair. And so to go from 2 years of that, you know, you can see how it's very easy for somebody to fall into that anybody being presented with the wheelchair at first would say, no way, that's not me, but then very quickly come to accept the wheelchair and then the idea that you could actually not be in the wheelchair, which is where you sort of started. It took a little bit to get to that place. So there was a shift that happened for you to accept the wheelchair, and there had to be a whole other shift that is sort
to of... Let go of the wheelchair. And, you know, and this also really fits in with your overall philosophy, which is always reaching for more. Like, your mom clearly knew you had it in you, and it's in your deep in your makeup to reach higher. And yet, I think we could all use a reminder, you know, to take that step when we get a little too comfortable.
You know, that's exactly it. Like, I was getting better because of my lifestyle while I was in the wheelchair. I made it my lifestyle while I was in the wheelchair to focus on exercising and to try to get my legs back. And I just made it a piece of who I was. But that next step, that jump, that little thing that turned out to be a really big thing, I didn't see for myself. It took someone else to really to see that and to help. And, you know, I think that's a piece of where the selflessness comes in, because a lot of people, well, first of all, they don't have the humility, I think, for someone to walk up and say something. And the other part is our own personal pride. You know, I didn't want to get up in the leg braces. I was like, I'm getting better like this. Why don't I just keep doing this? When really the leg braces helped me out oh so much. And I think that's where a lot of it comes in. It's just the way we can perceive the world. And in a lot of situations, it's the little things in ourselves that a lot of people don't look for. Like, they don't look at how can I better myself? And like we talked about earlier, you know, that hundredth of a second in that little way. A lot of people, they don't look inside and say, you know, how can I help myself? They look at the rest of the world and, you know, say, how can I fix that? When a lot of people, you know, not only do they, like, other people need that, but to be able to do that, other people need to feel the same way.
I think there's a couple of things in there too. I
mean,
absolutely.
I'm thinking there's physically being in a wheelchair, and then there's sort of metaphorically being in a wheelchair. And I think a lot of people have just accepted their perceived limitations. And then, you know, sometimes it's for somebody else outside to even point out that they don't have that limitation can be a reason for that person to say, you know, get out of here. Leave me alone. I can't possibly do that. So, you know, so the fact that you were able to step up to the plate when somebody said, you know what, as a matter of fact, you can get rid of that wheelchair. I mean, that is a huge thing, because again, you know, when you're looking at somebody from the outside, you're not living in their head. You get perspective, and you can often see, oh, this person really isn't limited at all. But when you're living inside your body, you know, day after day after day, you can sort of accept those limitations, and they're just ideas.
You get into that lifestyle.
Right.
You get into that daily lifestyle. And
you know, exactly. And, you know, we all have a wheelchair, right?
That's what I mean. It's like some people have physical wheelchairs and some people have metaphorical wheelchairs, and they're just ideas. You know, they're just ideas about what we're capable of. And it's funny, though, that sometimes when people come into our lives and say, hey, you don't need that wheelchair, we go, but I'm so used to this wheelchair, I want to hold on to it. This has sort of become a part
of
me, this limitation.
I feel like I'm getting better like this. Why would I ever need to take that next step?
Right.
But it's really terrific. And, you know, I think that piece of my life is what brought me to you guys, you know, for that sponsorship, is because I helped to realize that I could really push forward. And, like, you know, anybody could actually, this is America, we can all be professional athletes. You know, you watch the people at the Olympics, it's the heart and the soul that they put behind the perfection of everything that they do that really makes the difference. And if it's something you love, you can go out there and you can talk to people about it, and there's people out there who are willing to help. You know.
Well said.
I think we're going to take a short break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more about mono skiing and the next step of once you got out of that wheelchair.
And how you get to bodybuilding.
And how you get to bodybuilding, yeah. And wrestling.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5 on your FM dial. If you'd like to get involved with community radio, contact us at radiofreepalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Chickaloon, Butte, Palmer, and the surrounding areas.
Support for Radio Free Palmer comes from the Palmer Downtown Deli. Palmer Downtown Deli provides free Wi-Fi in an informal, casual, conversational environment, or for just individual solace. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner dishes, wraps, specialty sandwiches, soups, or desserts, including gelato Italian ice cream, are offered along with coffee, espresso, tea, specialty waters, or drinks. Music Arts performing live can be enjoyed every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. A comprehensive summary of Palmer Downtown Deli's menu options can be found at palmerdeli.com, and phone orders at 745-4100 are available as well. The Palmer Downtown Deli is located on South Alaska Street. The Palmer Downtown Deli, supporting community connectivity and community radio.
This is KVRF Sutton, 89.5 on your FM dial, Big Cabbage Radio.
Woohoo! Nice job, Andrew. Awesome. Showing off a little bit of his radio personality there.
Yes.
Doing the bottom of the hour station identification.
Where are you, a DJ? Where is your...
Oh, Country Legends 100.9. The, the classic country station out here in the valley. Number one station.
What time can people tune in to hear you on that station?
You know, right now I'm doing a sit-in. I'm working full-time at Sportsman's Warehouse, and I do the sit-in for all the football games and 3 to 7 p.m. for Eddie Maxwell in the afternoons.
Great.
So all the time.
Okay.
They'll randomly hear
any day,
on
3
their,
to 7 p.m.
Yeah,
okay.
And you can hear my commercials.
Oh, you see, do you do commercials too? For them, too?
I do lots of commercials for
okay,
them.
Okay, great.
Yeah, any of the ones that they don't want
to
do.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
You get to do them.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good practice.
So why don't we go from where you were really developing gains from walking with leg braces, and how did you get to that point back to competitive sports?
Well, actually, what happened was I became the miracle child for the Children's Miracle Network. I broke my back, I was 13, and then I ran through the whole rigmarole, being in a wheelchair, getting back up into my leg braces. I got back up into my leg braces when I was 15 years old, and as soon as I was standing up, I'm like, my doctor's got to see this. That same guy that I told to get out, because he was like, you know, the possibility of that happening is like 1%, and I was like, yeah, well, look now.
Yeah. So have you talked to him? I have.
Yeah, he's very, very, very proud of me. That's why they made me the miracle child.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's where I'm going. So, I went back in, and they were really proud of me. They were like, you know what? We're gonna put you in to be the miracle child of the Children's Miracle Network. And I was like, all right, let's do this. And Wish Upon a North Star called me a few weeks later. And they're like, hey, what would you like to do? And the Blue Angels were coming to town. I was like, I want to fly in a jet.
Wow.
So they were like, done. I got to be a pilot for the day. It was pretty fun. That's about it. I was part of the 16th Fighter Squadron for a day. They showed me all the equipment. I got to get in and out of the jet. I got to fly as a passenger in one of the little jets, go up, do all the little hammerhead maneuvers, and take some G's. It was pretty fun.
Did you throw up?
Nope.
Did you almost throw up?
Yep.
Yep.
Well, they didn't tell me not to eat before we went on the thing, so I was just sitting there holding it in.
How fast did you go?
I don't know. I have no idea. I know that I felt the G's on my body, though. Definitely made it a little bit difficult to breathe. Wow. They have these automated things that pump the blood back up to your legs, because I know I had to get up in there and I had to take my leg braces off so that the little machine or the little suits could pump the blood back up my body.
Right, so otherwise you pass out, right, if that doesn't happen.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. That happens, and yeah. I didn't want that to happen. Uh-huh. So that was pretty fun. I was happy.
So you got to fly with the Blue Angels, and now how do you get from that to mono skiing and Paralympic athlete?
Well, what happened was they chose me for the Children's Miracle Network, the Child of the Year for Alaska, and I got accepted. Apparently, there was like 10 of them, and I was the one that made the biggest difference, and I was able to be the best spokesperson.
So is that based on the work that you put in to get out of the wheelchair, or is that just based on your story? Like, how do they choose you for that?
It was based on my story. Mm-hmm. It was not only my ability to give speeches and the confidence behind, you know, what I did, but it was also the fact that I was still progressing, and the fact that I wasn't supposed to be really where I was. Okay. And so they put me out there to show others that were in that situation what they could accomplish. And that was the object behind that whole deal. And that's what brings me to you guys today. I went down there, and you know, it helped me to realize, because I was helping so many people with what I was doing, traveling around all the hospitals, giving the speeches, talking to other children, showing them what they could do. And there was one little boy that actually inspired me. He had leukemia. His name was Austin DeGroot, out of Texas, and the boy could sing. And man, we were down in Florida at the big convention. You know, it was all 50 Miracle Children from every state. We were all sitting there, and Austin was there, and I just got done traveling all around, you know, Disney World. I first day I was determined to go on every ride, and I did. But the next day I woke up, and I had my leg braces and dug like a little bit of a sore around my knees and whatnot, so I wasn't gonna walk that day because it hurt a lot. So I ended up just chilling in a wheelchair for the rest of that day, and actually catching geckos outside, just kind of all on my own. I was having fun catching geckos. My little brother came out and did it for a little bit, but he didn't really have too much fun. But Austin was having some problem with his white blood cells at the time, so his whole family, they left the room, and they all went out to go to Disney World, and they were all having fun. And he was sitting in his room, and he looked out the window while he was watching TV, and he saw me out there getting geckos. And so he came out with me, even though he wasn't supposed to be outside. He was like, I'm not going to sit in here and do this. He came out, and he was sitting there catching geckos with me. Of course, it wasn't till later that I found out that he wasn't supposed to be out there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was that tenacity for life that really helped to inspire me. Because, you know, he put his life on the line, but you know what? That it's better to live on the edge than to, you know, stay safely on the corner. That's the way I see it. You know, better. It's, I don't know. Life's short. Live it fast, I guess. You know, it's the same way with the X Games and everything. All those guys, they have the same philosophy. You know, it's everything. You're gonna jump off the big jumps. You know, there's a chance something really, really bad could happen. But you know what? If you don't do it, you kind of feel like you could have at the end of the day. You're like, you know, what if I did? And I think it really helps to push us in our lives. That's it's the tenacity we have. And you know, he helped to inspire me. And the boy could sing. We had a contest down there. What's the singing contest? Not the voice that's on the air.
America's
Got Talent.
Got Talent. Okay.
That's the one. Yes. Yeah. And it was like the Miracles Got Talent thing.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was not only the Miracle Children, but a lot of other like very famous people came in and sang. We had a lot of NBA stars. I don't remember their names.
Did you sing?
I didn't. I don't
you
sing.
Don't sing?
I talk. That's what I do. I'm not much of a singer. I can play guitar.
Oh, great.
But again, that was one of those things I saw, and I was like, oh, that'd be cool. I should learn that. So I did. And now I hardly have time for it. I really love playing guitar, but, you know. Either way. But Austin went up there, and he blew everybody away. By far. And you know, he wasn't supposed to be there. His parents didn't even know he entered in the contest.
And how old?
He was 7 years old.
7 years old.
I know. Such tenacity at such a young age. Yeah. And he was so mature. I swore he was at least 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. You know?
Do you remember what he sang?
Amazing Grace.
Wow.
Good job. Yeah. You did a great job. And everybody, he got the stand-up ovation. And all the other people that were there that were in the contest, they just... They gave up. they came out afterwards, and they're like, you know, I don't even deserve this, but for entertainment purposes, I'm just going to sing. Uh-huh. And they did. And, you know, they all did a great job, too, but they couldn't stand up for Austin. And you know, recently he's passed away, and I think at a very young age, and that's when I realized that there was a lot more that I really needed to do with my life. I knew that I needed to have that much more tenacity for life. And I took from before I broke my back the Olympics, which I wanted to do with wrestling, and I put that into my recent life, and I said, how can I achieve that? And that's when I started skiing, you know? And I came to you guys, you know? I came to Alaska Center for Acupuncture originally for the sponsorship. Luckily, you guys are all on board, which made a big difference. And then I moved on, you know? It was that little piece of pressure. What helped me to realize that is, you know, we're here in America, we all have all the opportunities that we'd ever need in life. And
so true.
I wrote up my own piece of paper. You guys read the original one. It was horrible. It really. I look
your original
at it,
sponsorship letter.
Yeah, I look at it, I'm like, that's so unprofessional. But I got lucky that you saw the determination in what I was writing. But I mean, you know, I was what, 16 when I came to
was
you
it,
guys.
Was it 16 when we met you?
I was 16.
That's 4 years ago.
Yep.
That's pretty wild.
I know.
So how did you decide mono skiing? I mean, there's a lot of other things that you could have done, right? So why mono skiing in particular?
Because I can make the biggest impact with it.
Mm-hmm. And how? What do you mean by that?
Well, because it's in the X Games, you know, people see it. They see it a lot. You know, it's out there a lot more. You know, it's fun. And, you know, we can also compete at the Olympic level with everybody else who, you know, isn't disabled.
Mm-hmm. So. Do non-disabled athletes compete in the mono ski, or is it just pretty much
there's a few
disabled athletes?
There's a few non-disabled athletes that compete in the mono ski.
I don't even really want to call you disabled. We have to come up with another label for you, because I wouldn't call you. There's a lot of people who are walking around on 2 feet who are disabled, and you're not.
Yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, it's all in the way you look at life.
It really is. You know, Christopher Reeve was asked, you know, what was one of the most frustrating things for him in his experience, and he said what's most frustrating is people who act like they have disabilities who don't. And that, you know, just the attitude. And you know, when you start to break through perceived limitations and you realize it's just mostly all in our heads and there's really nothing in the way, generally speaking, we could all probably do one heck of a lot more than what we're doing. And so when I hear the story of Austin and hear what you're doing, you know, I can't help but be inspired and take an inventory of, okay, well, where do I have a belief or an idea that's holding me back? And I just think that message, and especially because we have, like you say, in this country, we actually have this privilege to be able to do pretty much anything that we want to do, you know? And so are we using it, I think, is the message is I'm getting from you. So are we actually using this golden gift?
That's right. And you know, like not to, you know, kind of reiterate on what you're saying, but that's right. You know, the hundredth of a second in every little piece of your life, the hundredth of a second or the hundredth of a piece of every little thing that you do. And you know, not to kind of, well, I'm gonna be blunt about it, but you guys weren't the only people that I went to for sponsorship. I went to lots of people out there. You were one of the only ones that really you jumped on board. I'm glad you guys jumped on board so much, because that really kicked off my career. I really couldn't have gone where I did or gone how far without the support that I got in the beginning. Now, I wrote lots of letters, and I threw as many at as many people as I could, but out of every 100 that I put out there, you know, like 2 came back. And, you know, but there was those 2 that came back, so hey, why not print off 500 more copies? Because you know what? There's 1,000 more businesses out there.
Right. And you know, we had Jim Bell and Macy from Special Olympics Alaska in here a few months ago, and we were talking about, you know, the process of going out and asking for sponsorships. And his line's always, well, when no means yes, or no is the start of a relationship. You know, like just because you hear no from somebody it means so now you've established a relationship, you know, and you can always go back. Like, it doesn't mean that, you know, oh, forget it, it's over with, you know, no isn't the end of the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, and this is Alaska, you know, all of my funding went to Challenge Alaska. And then from there it went to help me do what I was doing. And that's what made the biggest difference, is because especially in Alaska, you know, we're all known for every little thing that we do in life. And a lot of people know Challenge Alaska as a big corporation that helps a lot of people do little things.
Yeah, tell us more about Challenge Alaska, how you got involved and what they are.
Well, you know, I'm not really 100% sure. I don't really remember. Oh, yeah. No, I do. Right here. Right here in Palmer, Body and Balance Physical Therapy. They, Ann over there.
Ann Thomas. Yeah.
Ann Thomas.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yes. They're right next door to us in the Kozlowski building.
She's so nice. She was, hey, you want to do this? I'm going to take you there, and you're going to try it. And I was like, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
So you mentioned to her that you might want to do mono skiing, and she said, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was like,
and she took you there. Shout out for Ann. Go, Ann.
Exactly.
That is awesome. That is amazing.
She took me there, and she paid for it. At the time, I was talking to her. I was like, you know, I feel like there's something I need to do. I started officiating wrestling at the time, because I was just up in my leg braces, I could get around enough. I started officiating wrestling, you know. I was just starting to initiate my life back into the real world, and that's when Ann said, you know what? Wrestling isn't all that, you know, because I couldn't go to the Olympics with it, you know. It was something that I loved and I really wanted to, and I started wrestling again. But it wasn't something that I could really push forward to. And she said, try this. And I said, skiing's for pansies. I'm a wrestler, you know, blah, I'm buff and stuff.
And by the way, I remember you walking up the stairs around that time, you know, and seeing you come in and out of Body and Balance, because you were going like three times a week. You know, I remember, so and to see you, you know, with the leg braces and to haul you over to Challenge Alaska, you know, that with that inspiration, that's pretty amazing.
Yes, well, she... We bonded a lot. I was there every day doing a lot of physical therapy, and she knew that I had it in me, and that's another one of those steps of somebody else that was like in my life that pushed forward and said, hey, you need to do this. And you know, I think there needs to be a lot more people like that out there. That's that 100th of a second. I don't even like with helping yourself, that little tiny piece of helping yourself, but that little tiny piece of just trying to help someone else, right? That really makes the big difference. And
and so she took you over there and she got you on a mono ski.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Yeah. It was amazing. I was at a wrestling tournament at the time, and she called me. She's like, hey, I'm coming through, going to Challenge Alaska, get in my car. I was like, I'm kind of busy right now. She's like, get out here. I was like, all right, whatever, I guess. So I was like, I'll try it. I'll try everything once. Got there, and I loved it. Oh man, I loved it. I got in so much trouble. I'll never forget the very first time I got on the mono ski. They said, all right, so this is how you do it, and this is how you turn. And I went straight down the hill, straight down to the bottom, turned, and then fell.
So I want to read. There's a little section. You had a little write up in the Anchorage Press, and it describes what a mono ski is. So it says a mono ski is basically a molded seat on a metal frame attached by a shock absorber to a single regular alpine ski. Kirka uses forearm crutches with ski tips called outriggers for pulls. He is the first mono skier to make a run down Christmas Chute. Is that in Alyeska?
Yeah, Christmas Chute's kind of a big deal.
Okay.
I was the very first mono skier to ever do it.
Did you turn on that one, or did you just go straight down?
No, I turned. You want to turn.
Okay.
It's like
is
pretty much a 50 degree
face?
Slope. It's on the north face. There's rock ledges, and there's sheer rock walls on both sides. It's fun.
And we can see video of you doing this on YouTube, correct?
Not Christmas Chute, but you can see videos of me doing
the North Face.
The North Face on YouTube. You can also see my X Games videos and all that stuff.
So how would they find you on YouTube? What do they look
Google
for?
Andrew Kirka. K-U-R-K-A.
Okay, and you'll come up on YouTube.
I'll pop up.
Okay,
I'll
great.
Pop up with all sorts of stuff and just follow the links. I have my website with all the stuff.
Okay, so you first time you're on a mono ski, you just go straight down the hill, turn and fall.
Turn and fall.
So you got to get a coach, right?
You know, one thing that helped to really push me forward was there was somebody else there, Gregory Peck. He's also here, a local here. An X Games competitor and a mono skier. He skied down right behind me, sprayed me in the face with snow, and was like, you should really turn on or work on turning. And I was like, Nice, I was like, yep, nice. Now I have to beat you because you just sprayed me in the face. So
did you beat him?
I did. I have recently. I've recently gotten a little bit better at racing than he is. Not to be too braggadocious or nothing.
He's reminding me of one of my favorite movies from the 80s, Better Off Dead. And John Cusack's instructions for heading down, it's equivalent to the North Face. It's like just going off the sheer cliff. And the person next to him says, you know, for instructions, go that way very fast. If something gets in your way, turn.
Turn. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Uh-huh. And, you know, there's been lots of obstacles around the way, but I've found a way to get around them, uh-huh. or to get through them, uh-huh. I should say.
Or there's some things you can just turn and not hit them,
bash through, yeah.
or go exactly. right through, yeah. yeah. Okay, so you got, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So with the monoskiing, there's jumps. Do you, with the X Games, are you doing jumps or is it speed? Is it all?
It's jumps. There's six of you on a single course, doing jumps, turning around gates, and doing all sorts of obstacles along the way. I think the biggest features are the jumps, because there's lots and lots of preparation that goes into them. They do a lot of pre-training to try to make sure that we don't get hurt on camera when we're down there. Training for X Games, what was it, 2 years ago? I broke my back.
The second time.
Yeah, the second time.
And that was going off a jump?
It was. Uh-huh. I landed, and I didn't have my shock properly set for the jump, and I overshot it, landed, and broke my back at T5? I don't know.
So it was up high. It was, okay.
Yeah, it was up really high. It was in between my shoulder blades.
And what was the extent of that injury, and how much rehabilitation did that require?
It took 6 months worth of working out at the gym. They gave me something called like a jewel brace or something. I didn't wear it.
You had no loss of function, though.
No loss of function. Thank God.
Very lucky.
That would have not been fun to go through that again. But yeah, I got lucky. What happened was I split my vertebrae right down the center because it was a compression fracture. I bottomed out my shock, and then I bottomed out my back for the most part. Split my vertebrae in half, and the way that it fell, it was laying against my aortic artery.
Wow.
So I had to stop skiing, and that was just the beginning of the year. If I was to have anything that compressed it too hard, then would have probably severed my aortic artery, and I would have not lived any longer, which would have not been fun, I imagine.
Wow.
So how did it heal? Was it really just a matter of time, you know,
it took
time off, or was there anything else therapeutically required?
It was just a matter of time off.
Yeah.
They said, you know what? You're healthy. You just have to give it time. You can't ski for 6 months. And 6 months of the season, and then I had 4 months of summertime to just sit there on my butt and wait till I could ski again. You know, it gave me a chance to raise sponsorship, but you know, there was a piece of it that made me feel like, you know, oh man, I'm losing so much right now. I could be doing so much harder. I could be out there skiing and you know, giving myself that piece of you know, I don't know, pressure, I suppose. Made me so much better when I came back, helped me to realize that that's what I needed to really contemplate on my skiing. Because I don't think there was a night when after I went out and I was trying to raise sponsorships that I didn't go home and watch a video and be like, oh, I need to work on this and this and this and this. And by the time I came back the next year, I was leaps and bounds past where I was, and it was just that self-contemplation that really helped me.
I want to read something from another thing from the press article. This is a quote in here from you. It says, I'm not afraid of getting hurt, and I'm not afraid of dying because I'm good with God, says Kirka. I'm not going to do something that's more likely to get me hurt or killed than not, but at the same time, I'm not going to back off because I'm scared of getting dinged or because my primary goal is just to finish, not to win. My favorite terrain to ski is the big rocky stuff where if you slip, you're going to eat it down a cliff face and end up breaking your body parts. That's what I love. Is that still how you feel?
Better on the edge than on the corner, I say. Yeah. I still feel that way. And it's what I love to do it. It's what I enjoy. That's how I got into the X Games, is because I love to jump off of cliffs. And I love to ski. I love to live on the edge, because when I go to sleep at night, like I said, I feel like I could have done it. I look back and I contemplate on my life, and I'm like, you know, if I did that, then somebody else could have seen, and it could have made that much of a difference to help them be like, oh, look, a guy who can't walk is out there, you know, jumping off of stuff. I can do that. You know, I can have fun. I need to get out of the house, go live my life, you know.
It's an amazing position that you're in and what you've created, because your very existence actually is a testimony to, you know, what's possible. And the fact that you've embraced that role and pushing it forward and not resting on it, but actually taking it as far as you can, is really incredible. And I think about, you know, the maturation kind of process, as one is just being out for a thrill and going for it, but it sounds like there's a certain intelligence, calculated risks that are also part of this too, and your journey. So it's not just being completely, you know, wild and throwing caution to the wind, but there's also something very, very calculated in the risks you're taking too, isn't there?
There is, you know, and that's especially with skiing. Or a big part of like even wrestling or any sport that you do, you know, it's 90% mental. It's how you prepare yourself for what you do. We know there's not a single cliff that I jump off of, not a single jump that I jump off of that I don't look at first, and I don't contemplate it, because like I broke my back going off one jump. You know, every single one of those jumps could easily be the end of my life. It's the way that you look at it, and the way that you prepare yourself to advance over the jump, you know, to move forward, I guess, you know, not only in life, but, you know, on the race course as well. It's how you perceive it, you know. You have to inspect it. Like, you inspect your life, you know, you inspect the race course, you inspect the jump. And, you know, not only can the jump be the end of my life, but the way that I inspect my life could be the end of my life. Because, you know, the way that you look at it, I don't want to put myself in a metaphorical wheelchair. And that slight percentage of how you live is really what makes the big difference.
So I wanted to hear a little bit about the X Games, but we're coming down to the wire here in terms of time. So maybe
the Paralympics ahead. When is that coming up?
So let's just get a little bit of that from you.
2014, Sochi, Russia. Mm-hmm. I'm on the A team right now for the U.S. Paralympic team. I plan on also competing with some able-bodied skiers. I've been able to really advance my skills so far. I'm really fortunate to be where I am, and I'm young, just now getting into it, and been able to advance pretty quickly just because I go for it. You know, a lot of people, they're really cautious when they start it, but, you know, there's one thing I'd like to say before we go, is that, like, Challenge Alaska got me started here, and there's lots of people out there with disabilities, and they have a lot of programs that can really help to change lives like mine. You know, mine was changed by them, and there's so many other people out there that have disabilities, or so many other people out there that don't have disabilities that could volunteer and really make a big difference in people who do have disabilities' lives. And, you know, it's only a disability until they see a way to get around it or to get through it. And that's what makes the big difference, is they have, you know, a sport for me was such a big deal. It gave me something to live for. You know, it gave me that thing to push forward to, you know, that competition. I had that with wrestling, and I really needed it, and skiing gave that to me. So a big piece of that was Challenge Alaska, because they gave that back to me, and I realized, you know, I could make a difference with this, and it's what I love. And there's other people out there with those disabilities that really need that also. And, you know, there's so many things. You could just simply toss them, like, you know, in a sit ski or in a sled for sled hockey, have them push themselves around. They'll realize that they love it, and they could be the next big thing. That's the way I see it, is I'm just a pebble in the water, and hopefully my wakes, you know.
Fantastic.
To help to get
the
more
pretty
other
big
people
wake. Maybe small
well,
pebble, the, pretty big wake.
Yeah, well, the bigger the wake.
You're the butterfly
people.
Flapping its wings and causing a hurricane across the planet.
Well, hopefully it gets more butterflies going, I guess. Yep.
Well, you're listening to Bridge to Everywhere. We're interviewing Andrew Kirka, and you can Google Andrew Kirka and find out more about him and his work. And really thank you, Andrew, for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks
really
a lot for being here,
time.
Andrew. It was great to have you on the show.
Okay.
Have a great night.
Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska.